Now we roll on here on Sports Byline and the Spano and Black Attack. I'm Joe Spano. I want to go out to the phones right now and bring in from GoForThe2.com and SB Nation Radio, my buddy Joe Lisi. Joe, welcome back to the Spano and Black Attack. It's always great to talk college football with you.
Always a pleasure, Joe. Love talking college football with you. You have a great show. Can't wait now. Chomping at the bit.
I know. You kicked things off on SB Nation Radio on Saturday. Am I correct?
Yeah, 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern time to about 12 noon. We'll be kicking it off. Great show. College football tailgate at its best.
You are exactly right. Before we actually jump to the college football landscape, I want to get your perspective on your time with him in college and how you think it'll translate to the pros. And that's Trevor Siemian. You know, he's become something of a household name of late because he's taken over as the starting quarterback for the defending Super Bowl champions. But I can guarantee you this. Most of the people throwing his name out there have not seen him play very much, and they're only going by some limited exhibition work in the NFL and what they hear coming out of Denver. You watch a lot of college football, more than just about anybody. You saw him a lot at Northwestern. Give us a scouting report on Trevor Siemian and how you think he can translate his skills and his success in college to the NFL level.
Well, I think he's a solid quarterback, Joe. I mean, he played in the spread attack with Pat Fitzgerald in Northwestern and split time with a quarterback named Kane Coulter. I mean, he's a cool, collected quarterback that can make every throw in terms of his progressions. He can read defenses. He had a dynamic game about 4 or 5 years ago on the road in the Carrier Dome. He led a comeback for Northwestern against Syracuse. This kid is a solid quarterback. I think he can make the right reads and lead this team to possibly the playoffs again. I'm really high on what he can do, and I think that he's an elite, not an elite quarterback, but can be an elite quarterback with some time in the system.
Is he kind of surprised everybody, and does he at least hold off Paxton Lynch for this season? And if not, and if he does, is it the kind of situation where he ends up being the long-term starter for the Denver Broncos, and perhaps they have to move, they end up trading Paxton Lynch and getting quite a bit back for him in return? Is that the top side that you see for him, or do you ultimately see him slipping back behind a Paxton Lynch and being an elite backup quarterback with Lynch being the starter?
I think he has the intangibles to be a starter, and he's in the league a few years now, so in terms of reading defenses and breaking down his progressions, that's the number one thing that I think Trevor Siemian brings to the Denver Broncos, and we saw what Denver did a few years ago in terms of drafting Brock Osweiler, and now he's no longer with the team. He had the physical attributes. He was 6'7", about 245 pounds, came with a big arm from Arizona State. But yet when they threw him into the mix, he really didn't take the next step and now moved on to Houston. So, again, I think Trevor Siemian's a solid quarterback. I don't think he's just a carryover to Paxton Lynch, because I really think he brings the mental aspect to this team, and he's a smart quarterback. You look at Paxton Lynch last year, he's a big quarterback, led Memphis to the biggest start since 1961, but he lost 4 or 5 games down in the stretch, so he's going to have to get the playbook down, and right now I think Trevor Siemian is the best quarterback to lead the Denver Broncos week number one.
Thanks so much on that, Joe, because I really did want to dive in and get the benefit of the amount of time that you saw Trevor Siemian. You've seen him more than a lot of people, so I thought you'd be a great place to go to get some real insight on Trevor Siemian, the quarterback, and why the Broncos made the decision that they made. But now I want to take it to the college football landscape. We already have one game in the books. They went to Australia, and Cal was all over Hawaii. But now we move to the real kickoff of the college football season. This opening weekend slate is absolutely terrific, and there's a ton of spotlight games that are going to come to light this weekend. Starts on Thursday and rolls all the way through the weekend. Amongst these Thursday night games, which one is really your favorite? Which one lights your fire?
For Thursday night, I mean, there's two. It's Oregon State at Minnesota and South Carolina at Vanderbilt. I mean, you're talking about an SEC conference game to start the year, and this intriguing Pac-12 Big Ten matchup. It's a contrast in style, so I want to see how that game plays out, the Beavers and the Golden Gophers. But you can't take your eyes off that App State-Tennessee game. A lot of expectations on this Tennessee Volunteer team as well, possible national championship team by many experts. I want to see how they come out of the gate to start their year as well.
You know, you go to the Friday night slate, number 8 Stanford, they're hosting unranked Kansas State. Bill Snyder teams are always tough. They're tougher in the Little Apple than they are on the road. Stanford's breaking in a new quarterback. Kevin Hogan graduates and moves on to the NFL. They're a 15.5-point favorite. Do you think they have a lot of trouble with Kansas State, or are you pretty comfortable that Stanford will be able to hit the ground running despite breaking in a new quarterback?
Yeah, I'm very confident that Stanford wins this game. I'm not sold on Kansas State. You look at Kansas State last year, Joe. They only averaged 158 rushing yards per game and couldn't stretch defenses vertically. They only averaged 178 passing yards per game. That was their MO offensively. If they fell behind in ball games, they had trouble catching up and moving the football. So I think a speed perspective is the breakdown in this game. I think Stanford and Christian McCaffrey are the difference. Even though Stanford's offense revolves solely around Christian McCaffrey, I think the cross-country trip for Kansas State in this matchup and the speed perspective really favors Stanford in this game. And unfortunately, I'm picking Kansas State to be just a notch above Kansas in the Big 12 this year. I think they'll take a major step back under Bill Snyder. So I think Stanford dominates this matchup.
All right, Joe, we got some time left, and I do want to get through this weekend's schedule, and then I want to go out to a little overview and get some thoughts on some of the major players within college football and what kind of seasons they'll have. But kind of take us through the rest of this weekend. There's some great matchups on Saturday. You have a terrific matchup on Sunday night, and then you have that Monday night matchup between Ole Miss and Florida State that really caps week one of the college football regular season. So kind of take us through some of the best and brightest matchups and how you see them unfolding as this weekend unfolds in college football.
Yeah, I think it starts for me at 12 o'clock with that Oklahoma-Houston game. I mean, Oklahoma playoff caliber team in Houston, 13-1, that knocked off Florida State in the Peach Bowl. That's a dynamic matchup. The game is played in Houston. Can Oklahoma get off to a fast start? They lost two ball games last year, Joe, to Texas and Clemson. They allowed 313 rushing yards and 312 rushing yards in both of those ball games and struggled with mobile quarterbacks, Jerod Hurd and Deshaun Watson. Will they struggle with Greg Ward Jr. is the major question. I think this game is very close. I think in the end, though, Oklahoma does pull out a 3 or a 4-point victory, but I think Greg Ward Jr. and the Cougs are in this game from start to finish. You look at another ball game, 3:30 Eastern Time, Texas A&M and UCLA, Josh Rosen. A lot of expectations on this team in the Pac-12 as well, but he loses Jordan Tate, his big play wide receiver, loses Thomas Duarte and Paul Perkins, the running back. Defensively, UCLA allowed 220 rushing yards in their 5 losses. Texas A&M is my surprise team in the SEC West. They have Trevor Knight and Keith Ford coming over from Oklahoma and one of the best wide receiver corps in the nation. It's year number 2 in John Chavis' system. I think Texas A&M gets the victory at home and surprises a lot of people over UCLA. And then you look at the night matchups. I mean, you can't get better than that when you look at possibly 2 great games, Alabama and USC. Alabama starting 3rd straight year with a new quarterback. They lose their center, Ryan Kelly. USC, can they make strides under Clay Helton this year and start fast with junior quarterback Max Brown? We'll have to see. I think this game is, again, a very close affair. Alabama's won 14 straight by 22 points per game in their opening season week one matchups. But I think USC has the athleticism to move the football, and I think Alabama wins a 3-point game. You look at that matchup, Clemson and Auburn. Clemson offensively is one of the most prolific offenses you'll see 11 straight games with over 500 yards of total offense. In 11 of the 15 last year, they rushed for over 200 yards. And in 13 of the 15, they completed 60% or more of their passes. Auburn will be starting quarterback Sean White. Third straight year for the Tigers now. Auburn with a new defensive coordinator, a lot of pressure on Gus Malzahn. I don't think they can run the football consistently against Clemson, and I think Clemson dominates that matchup in the second half. I think they get around a 17-point victory. Notre Dame in Texas. Notre Dame won this game 38-3 last year. A lot of people expecting revenge for Texas with new quarterback Shane Buechele, but I think Notre Dame has the edge at the quarterback position with Malik Jair and Deshaun Kizer. I think they're solidified there. And I do think they get a double-digit victory Sunday night. Intriguing matchup Monday, Joe. Ole Miss and Florida State. Florida State with a lot of injuries that a lot of people aren't talking about. Two to Jesus Wilson and wide receiver Travis Rudolph. Both of those wide receivers are banged up entering this matchup. Their big play safety, Derwin James, hasn't played in terms of practice all week long as well. And they're going to be starting redshirt freshman quarterback DeAndre Francois in that matchup. They're going to be going up against a gunslinger in Chad Kelly. I like Ole Miss in this matchup. They're a gutty team, and coupled with the fact that the Florida State Seminoles injuries in this matchup, I think Ole Miss gets the upset victory Monday night.
Wow. I'll tell you, Joe, it's a great schedule, and you really did a great job of breaking down all the marquee matchups. And you look at the season coming in, Alabama breaking in a new quarterback. You know, Clemson brings back almost their entire offense led by their quarterback. You mentioned Houston prop maybe coming up just short against Oklahoma. I guess to me, because we got a couple of minutes here, to me the biggest surprise team and the one nobody's talking about but everybody should is the Tennessee Volunteers. There's going to be a new sheriff in town in the SEC East. Take everybody through the Tennessee Volunteers for a little bit for those that don't know much about them, because they're going to jump back into the national radar in college basketball under Butch Jones this year.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Tennessee, they lost four games last year in 2015 by a total of 17 points. They returned 17 starters, 9 on offense, 8 on defense, and led by a dual-threat quarterback in Joshua Dobbs and a solid running back in Jalen Hurd. Here's the problem that I have with Tennessee. This is a young team that hasn't had a significant victory in the SEC in over 3 years. They've been close. They lost to Alabama by 5 last year when they had a fourth quarter lead on that team. They had a 17-3 victory lead entering the fourth quarter against Oklahoma and lost that game in double overtime. They had a 13-point lead in the fourth quarter against Florida. They allowed Will Grier in that matchup to pull that victory out within 6 minutes left in the game. So until Josh Dobbs and this team have a significant victory in the SEC, and more importantly, a significant road victory, I cannot back this team, especially with all the expectations surrounding them. Everybody's picking this team to be the SEC champion. I just don't see it at this part of the season. Now, if they are able to run the table and be 6-0 after the first month and a half, I might change my opinion. But right now, not sold on the Tennessee Volunteers, Joe.
All right. Well, we got a difference of opinion there. I don't know about SEC champions, but perhaps they emerge out of the SEC East and get to the SEC championship game. We don't have a lot of time left. So literally in about 60 seconds, because we spotlighted so many of the marquee teams in spotlighting the marquee matchups, how do you expect this college football season to shake out? When the dust settles on the regular season, who do you expect to be in the playoffs? And when it's all said and done, who do you expect to be standing in 60 seconds or less?
I like Clemson. I like Notre Dame. I like Texas A&M. And I like Oklahoma State now with all the injuries to Florida State. I think that hurts them. And I think they lose this matchup week one and knocks them out of the playoffs. So that's the way I see this season, you know, bearing down. I think it's going to be great. And I think there's going to be upsets throughout the season. There is parity in college football, Joe. So buckle up. It's going to be a great year.
Well said, Joe. We'll do it again in short order. And after we have a little bit of college football under us, we'll kind of take a look at not only upcoming matchups, but take a look at how we expect the season to expand out in a little more detail. Thanks so much for the insight, Joe. We'll do it again real soon.
Always a pleasure, Joe. Can't wait.